Ever wonder about the impact you have on others or the impact that they have on you? The Ripple Effect on Thrive Life TV explores just that. You'll understand how one person, one moment can transform your entire life. Discover stories of profound influence, mentorship, and life-altering connections. Join us to uncover the power of human interactions in shaping careers, relationships, and personal growth. Subscribe to Thrive Life TV today with a 7-day no-risk free trial and start understanding the ripples you create and receive in the journey of life. Your story of impact is just one click away. Go to thrivelifetv.com or search for us in the Google and Apple Play stores. We'll see you inside.
And I'm John Wine.
Like the drink, I married a great name and man.
We've been married for 21 years.
But we've been together for 29 years.
We have 3 children, 2 girls and a boy.
John is a petroleum engineer.
And Amy is a marriage therapist.
We have decided to try and work together, bringing you this podcast. We know from experience that relationships aren't perfect, far from it.
And Amy has worked with hundreds of couples in a large private practice in Texas.
You can get those sparks aflying with some tips and tricks we've learned by making a lot of marriage mistakes.
And from all of Amy's professional work with couples, hey, you should be married to a marriage therapist.
So if you want to have a marriage on fire,
here we go.
Hey there, it's Amy, and I am back with you today on the Marriage on Fire podcast, and I have a special treat for you today. I have my very first guest on the show. Not that I want to stress her out by saying that, but it is my very first guest. And her name is Adriana Wallace, and she is a licensed chemical dependency counselor intern that is in my counseling center office. And I brought her in here today because I'm getting a ton of questions about addiction and marriage. And what do we do with that? So we're going to dive right in today. None of my usual fluff. And I'm just going to ask Adriana to tell us a little bit about herself.
Thanks, Amy, and thanks for having me today. I'm really excited and a little nervous, as you said. This is my first podcast, so this is a new experience for me. So yes, so I have been with Amy Wine Counseling Center for almost a year, actually, in February, and I am very excited to be here. I love my job. The reason that I got into the addiction field was because I have had personal relationship with addiction and also friends and family who have dealt with addiction in the past. And so it's something that is very near and dear to my heart and something that I have been very passionate about throughout my life. I've seen the consequences and the beauty that comes out of it. And so that's why I'm here today. So thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm glad you're here. And one of the reasons we hired you was because we kept seeing addiction come up in all that we were doing. So in our couples counseling specifically, we were having addiction issues come in, and then even in our individual counseling, and then adults and teens. So we decided that we needed to add that specialty because not everybody is specialized in it. And I do not profess to know. I know enough probably to be dangerous, but I don't know enough to totally help somebody work through that addiction and come out on the other side. So that's one of the reasons that we wanted you here. And we've loved having you because it makes it a lot easier for us to say, you know what, I have somebody that can help you with this piece on your personal self, right? Or with the spouse. What do I need to do to help? But first, I want to talk about what is addiction?
So first, let me say that, you know, as you were saying, that it's nice to have someone that is a little bit more specialized in the field. You know, addiction is forever growing, forever changing, how we view it, how it is seen, what we do with it. And it is very, very individual to each person and their situation, their history of it, and how they feel about it, how they work it, how it affects their life. So there's always going to be room for learning and more knowledge. We will never know everything there is to know.
Right.
So let's begin with addiction. What is addiction? So there's many, many different definitions of it, but simply put, addiction is an unhealthy relationship with a mood or mind-altering substance, usually chronic in nature, mm-hmm. that has lifelong consequences.
Right.
That is the basic definition of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that means is a lot of people believe that addiction is that drunk that you're seeing on the road and he's drunk all day long, mm-hmm. or the opioid, you know, user that's, you know, shooting up heroin every day.
Right.
That is not necessarily the only view of addiction. Addiction has a lot to do with your patterns. What are the negative consequences that it's causing in your life? You know, mm-hmm. are you having conflict with spouses or family members? You know, are you missing work? Are you tardy to work? Are you lacking in your responsibilities? Are you not present at home? Are you not playing with your children? You know, let's look at the patterns. Let's see what it's doing in your life, in your
right.
lifestyle.
Right. And I know when I talk to couples, they don't always think that the addiction has anything to do with the problems in the marriage. So I have to be very careful because a lot of them have not even recognized the patterns, like you just said, because they think to have an addiction, they've got to be the fall down mm-hmm. drunk or totally addicted to opioids and all of those things, not just being absent. Mm-hmm. On a day-to-day basis, most of them are going to work.
Right.
Most of them are functioning, but they don't see all those little things they're missing. And when their spouse brings it up, what I find is they don't believe that that's part of the problem
mm-hmm.
because they're functioning in so many other areas.
One of the things that, you know, couples in a marriage will start noticing first are a little, you know, the increase in the arguments and the conflict, the increase in the loss of connection between the two, just small things like, you know, he's not coming home for dinner or she's mm-hmm. or coming home on time for dinner. You know,
right.
we're sitting down as a family, he's late or she's not here yet or she's going to bed early because, you know, her head hurts.
Right.
Those types of things, they start creating a disconnect. We're not communicating as much. We're not spending as much time together. We're just mm-hmm. not engaging. We're not present. And so those are small details that we do tend to overlook and we do tend to kind of make excuses for or, you know, make up or even sometimes just lie to ourselves because we don't want to see what's
right.
happening in our marriages or in our families because that's hard and that's scary. And when you know that there could possibly be a problem,
mm-hmm.
your next steps is to figure out what I do about that. And that is a very scary step to take.
Yeah. And I think, too, a lot of people that I've seen think that it's really only a male that has an addiction problem. Can you speak to that?
I believe that that is part of kind of what we see out there. I think one of the reasons that we tend to believe that is because, from my experience, women tend to be a lot more private
yes.
about their addictions. Sometimes there's a lot more shame for
mm-hmm.
women coming out and saying, I have this issue because they're, you know, mothers or because they're the ones that are supposed to kind of hold the family together. You know, we're the ones who nurture our children. We're the ones who clean. We're the ones who tidy up. We're the ones who take care of husband. We're the ones who, you know, and so we feel like if I fall apart, everybody falls apart.
Right.
So we tend to hide and we tend to, you know, a lot of times our spouses don't even know that as
yeah.
women, we have addiction issues. There is a lot of women who stay home from work
mm-hmm.
and they work in the home, which is an amazingly difficult job, and it is a never-ending job. It is a very stressful job, but a lot of women take substances to get through the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can also be a very isolating job and a very lonely job
right.
when you're at home taking care of children in the home and everybody else. So they believe that it's more men that deal with addictions because we are not open about it. We're not communicating more. We're a little more scared to put ourselves out there and say and be vulnerable and say, hey, I may have an issue with this.
Right.
Because what will that say about me? What will it say about my family? What will it say about my character?
Yeah.
And so we hide.
Absolutely. That's powerful. It's the behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. So what happens if I am the one with the addiction? How is that going to impact the marriage?
So if you're the one with the addiction, first of all, remember that drugs and alcohol impair your judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I remember reading this blog one time, and I love the way this author put addiction. He said, addiction is the disease that tells the addict they don't have a disease.
Oh, wow.
And I love that so much because it couldn't be more truthful.
Right.
You know, we as the active addict think that we are not, we haven't changed.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's the same. I'm still working. I'm still here at home for dinner. I'm still doing my responsibilities. I'm still taking out the trash. I'm still going out on date nights with my wife. I don't have a problem. Everything's fine.
Right.
But the places where the people around us and what you will start seeing over time as addiction continues to progress and deepen is that there will be impacts in loss of income, cash, things like that. Again, disconnect. You'll see an increase in disconnect. Your desire to connect with your spouse, your children, mm-hmm. you know, being present in the relationship, you will start seeing a change in your value system and the way that you approach things, the things that you will say yes to and no to, and how you start perceiving life and situations.
Right.
You will notice that that will kind of start going on the back burner. That impacts the marriage because our value systems are so important in the dynamics of our family unit and our family systems and how we interact with each other. So when we start allowing our substance to take over, which is what it does, and it starts taking hold of us, it really takes over how we see things, how we feel about things, how we connect with people, how we treat people. Or, you know, you'll notice a difference in your mood swings and the way that your patience level with your children and your
mm-hmm.
spouse. You will start possibly not being around for family events. Or, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're not feeling well or
right.
you have work to do. You will start wanting to detach from those things that previously were so important to you.
Right.
Right. All along, still believing that you're the same person. And
mm-hmm.
this isn't because you're crazy or you're lying or you're this terrible human being that's trying to defraud your family. It is what the addiction does. It's what the disease does. It makes you believe that you're actually okay. I'm doing fine.
Wow.
I'm managing this. I'm okay. You're not trying to lie to the people you love. You're not trying to betray their trust. You're not trying to create mistrust. But you can't help it because your attachment now has gone from I'm attached to my loved ones. I'm attached to the feeling of holding my wife's hand. I'm attached to the feeling of playing with my child. I'm attached to the feeling of having sex with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
To I'm attached to this pill.
Right.
Because this pill actually, scientifically speaking, is giving me more dopamine levels. It's giving you more dopamine than the attachment that you would get from spending a great night with someone you love.
Right.
It is releasing more dopamine in our brain. So now our brain has been taught that we want this more.
Okay.
We want this over here more because this feels better. This gives us more reward.
Right.
Right. So even though we love our families, we cannot help but run towards the one thing that makes us feel better.
Wow. I'm like sitting here enamored. Like I don't even have any words because that what you said was so powerful. And I don't think I've ever heard it put that way. Speaking from somebody that has the addiction. And I wanted that on here because what I hear often is usually from the spouse that does not, and they do not understand it whatsoever. So they get angry and they get frustrated and they're hurt.
Absolutely.
So then they are always asking, I don't get it. But I think what you just said is going to help so many people get it
mm-hmm.
and understand. It's not what they want, but chemically, this makes them feel better.
Yes, chemically. They're attached to it now.
Mm-hmm.
When there's active addiction, it's a whole new ballgame.
Right.
We're not talking physical and psychological dependency where there's some tolerance built up, you're having a little withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in full active addiction, which tends to be right around the corner from dependency, your main priority is no longer the life that you loved and seeked.
Mm-hmm.
Your main priority is now this one thing that helps you reward yourself throughout the day because, hey, I've had a great day at work, so I'm going to go use because that makes me happy. It stimulates me.
I deserve it.
I deserve it. Or this thing that helps you relax because it's been a long day and
mm-hmm.
I just want to relax. I just want to sit on the couch and relax. So I'm going to go, you know, smoke a joint or I'm going to go, you know, have a six pack or I'm going to go whatever it is. Or you want to numb.
Sometimes I hear from the spouse, mm-hmm. of the person that has the addiction, one of the biggest things I hear of them, and we kind of touched on a little bit ago, of them not getting it, mm-hmm. right? But they don't understand it because they don't have it. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's just stop. Mm-hmm. Just end it. Mm-hmm. Our relationship should be better and more a priority than this addiction. Mm-hmm. So why is this so hard to just stop? Mm-hmm. You say you want me, but do you really? Because mm-hmm. you're not showing that. And that's where some of that anger stems, because they're not genetically predisposed to having addiction in their background. They have no understanding of how difficult it is just to stop. And to them, it's just stop. Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone that is speaking that?
I would say that you have to try to remember that they are not doing this because they have control.
Okay.
At the point that a person moves into active addiction, mm-hmm. they are no longer in control of themselves.
Okay.
Like we talked about previously about our brains receiving more or having mm-hmm. more dopamine release from drugs
right.
over the things that we emotionally care about, mm-hmm. that we're emotionally attached to, like our families and our children and our spouses. We are now attached. Our attachment has moved over here.
Okay.
So, and on top of us now being attached to a chemical, right, that mm-hmm. tells us this feels better.
Right.
Right. We also don't know ourselves anymore. When we're using every day or every other day,
wow.
because you have to consider that, yes, I hear that I'm using every day. And yes, that makes sense, right? You're using every day, so you're impaired every day. But my husband doesn't use every day, or my spouse doesn't use, my wife doesn't use every day. They use 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't they just stop?
Right.
Well, you have to remember that if I am smoking crack cocaine on Saturday and Sunday, okay, or getting drunk Saturday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday,
mm-hmm.
you're hungover Monday.
Right.
Tuesday, you're still not feeling quite right. Mm-hmm. You're feeling better, but you're not quite yourself. So we're really talking Wednesday.
Right.
Wednesday, I'm back to some sort of clarity.
Okay.
I'm back to a mind that hasn't been impaired, that's not foggy, mm-hmm. right? So then we have 2 days, Wednesday, Thursday, and then we're back at it. Where there are you supposed to have a connected, bonded relationship where there can be communication and honesty and
right.
we can understand ourselves? The person who is using, even on any kind of consistent level, does not know who they are anymore. They lose
wow.
a sense of themselves. They lose a sense of what's important. They lose a sense of their values. They are not trying to tell you lies. They're not trying to betray. They're not trying to cheat you. They lose the ability of really understanding that they are no longer in control of that,
mm-hmm.
of no longer in control of really what they're putting forth into this relationship, because they're not there. They're not really present.
Right.
So you have to understand that when you say to a spouse that's actively using, why don't you just stop? Well, chemically, biologically, I can't stop at this point because
mm-hmm.
it's gone too deep, right? So
right.
I need help. I need treatment. I need to figure out what is going to work for me
uh-huh.
to be able to separate from this.
What is active addiction? You've said that a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
When does it go into an active addiction? Is there a layer or is there a time frame? What happens?
I wouldn't say that there's a time frame. Okay, so we can get really deep into this. So there is what we would call, for example, substance abuse or alcohol abuse. Okay,
tell me the differences.
So you have someone who's called a normie, for
okay.
example, someone who can socially, very normally drink and use drugs.
Okay.
Okay. What does that look like? Again, every situation is very different. So I don't want to make you think that if you only do this once or twice, then everything's okay. No amount of illegal substance is ever okay. But there are people that are not genetically predisposed, and so therefore they can socially here and there use drugs or drink and nothing will come of it. They
okay.
will continue their life, no big deal. They don't use it to cope. They don't use it to reward themselves. They don't use it to relax. It was just there. They used it. It's done. It's
okay.
over. It's over. There's people that have, for example, prescription drugs is one that's really easy to abuse.
Right.
We're prescribed something for anxiety. We're just prescribed something for, you know, depression, whatever it is. And, you know, maybe we have extra Adderall, extra Vyvanse or Xanax at home. And well, one makes me feel pretty okay, but I'm having an extra special tough day today, so I'm going to take an extra one, even though it only says to take one. That felt okay. I was able to kind of function okay with that. So next time I might be a little bit more, you know, inclined to take two instead of the one, because two really kind of worked for me. Well, you know, that would be something we would call like substance abuse, right? Okay. We're abusing the amount that we are supposed to take. We're taking more of it, or we're drinking, you know, instead of having one or two drinks in the evening, you know, we're drinking seven or eight. And then tomorrow we're drinking, you know, another five or six, you know, we're drinking more than the limits that we really should.
Okay.
Right? What happens is you go into dependency. After a little while of abusing a substance, it's easy for that to move into dependency. Dependency looks more like a physical and a psychological dependency, where there's a little bit of tolerance being built up. There's some withdrawal symptoms here and there, where it's kind of like, and that could just be a little bit of anxiousness for some people, where I'm having a really bad day, you know, so I really just want to have a drink. You know, there's a little bit of tolerance, that anxiety behind it. You're kind of becoming a little bit dependent on this substance or to make you feel better, or because you're starting to feel like, you know, I do better with this substance than without it. Where it moves into addiction, again, looks very different for a lot of people. When there is a more of a chronic use, more of a compulsion to use, we're using it more heavily, we're using more amounts, we're using more often. But the main component is that with active addiction, the brain chemicals are actually being changed. The chemicals in your brain are changing. Okay. So when we talk about that dopamine level and the addict is getting so much more of a release of dopamine from shooting heroin or, you know, doing a line of coke or, you know, drinking from morning to night, at that point, their brain is telling them, no, you don't want to go relax over here by the park and take deep breaths or learn to take a walk with your spouse or learn to communicate. Mm-hmm. If you just do this line, that's going to make you feel better.
Right.
That's where you are going to feel safe. That's where you're going to be able to continue to with your day.
You can emotionally disconnect.
Oh, yeah. And you know, a lot of times emotional disconnect will happen already at the dependency part.
Absolutely.
It is a very fine line, I will say. It's not like stair steps where it's like bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
Sometimes for some people it can look like that, but really it's a very fine line and it can happen very, very quickly.
Okay.
Going from dependency to addiction can happen quickly because, again, it happens without us knowing. Very sneaky, it's very sly. We just learn that these are the patterns that we're used to working with. And we keep going to them. We keep going to them, even if they're negative. Even if we're seeing negative consequences, we're moving towards them because they're serving a purpose greater for us than the negative consequence that we're getting.
Got it.
Whether that purpose is, again, relaxing, numbing, rewarding ourselves.
Okay, so what happens if my spouse has the addiction? How can I be supportive but not enable them?
Okay, that's a really good question. There's a very fine line between supporting and enabling our spouses, our addicted spouses, or our dependent spouses. And usually that is because, you know, we believe and we're told that as loved ones, we are to support the people that we care about, which is correct. We want to support those that we love.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where we enable, you know, first let's talk about what is enabling. Enabling basically is where we use behaviors to protect others that we care about from them really experiencing the full impact and consequences of their behaviors, right? So when we enable the ones that we care about, that we love, what we're doing is honestly not allowing them to feel the full ramifications of what they're doing and how they're affecting other people.
Okay.
And so what we're doing is we're creating a safe space for them to be able to continue their addictive behaviors and patterns.
Okay.
And what that does is that does not allow them, we're not helping create motivation for change in them, right? If we are making excuses for them, which would be an enabling behavior, so-and-so didn't come today to the birthday party because they had a lot of work to do, or because they didn't feel good, or they're coming down with something, you know, when the truth is they're hungover, or they just didn't want to come. When we're making excuses for them, lying for them, doing the responsibilities for them around the house, they're no longer picking up after themselves, so we're picking up after themselves. They're no longer working as much as they used to because at this point they're not able to, so I'm having to get a second job or pick up more hours so I can make up for the income that's lost. on their end. When we're doing that, all we're doing is shielding them. We're building a little cocoon around them that says, it's okay, I'm going to help you because I don't want people to know what's going on in our household because that's scary and that's vulnerable and that can make us feel shame. And so that allows them to go, okay, well, I'm being taken care of. I'm just going to keep using.
Right.
And then what happens with you is you're going to start feeling resentful, angry. You've lost trust. You feel betrayed. And you're not taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
So, again, you're enabling. You're not allowing them to suffer the consequences that will motivate them to change their behaviors.
What type of, how does that look if they're setting a boundary?
So where support comes in is where the boundaries come in. First of all, in supporting our spouse who has issues with addiction, we want to, first of all, it's kind of like the oxygen mask thing in an airplane. You know, they say get in the airplane, and the first thing you're going to do if there's an issue is you're going to put on your oxygen mask before you can put on the person next to you. It's the same concept. Okay. If you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be able to help them.
Right.
So how do you support a spouse? You seek help yourself.
Okay.
You get connected with an Al-Anon or a Nar-Anon, and you become part of a support group. You know, you learn what it's like. You realize that you're not alone in this. There is hope in recovery. There is hope in this disease that we're talking about.
Right.
People do get better. It's not curable, but it is something you learn to live with. Right. And it's something you learn that you don't need in your life. So you seek help for yourself. You get stronger. You read up about addiction and you set boundaries. It's not uncommon for, like we said earlier, couples who have addiction issues, they become codependent on each other. So, you know, that codependency looks, you know, it's almost like an enmeshment. Kind of don't know where the one person ends and the other one begins, you know, because you just kind of start reacting to the way the dynamics that they're setting up, that the addictive partner is setting up. We protect them. So then everything that goes on with them, their moods, their reactions to things, you take those on yourself.
Right.
You know, and then you, again, you're not practicing self-care. You're not doing the things that you need to do to make sure that your mental health is in place so you can be there for your family. So that's where the boundaries come in. You have to learn to detach with love.
Okay.
When it comes to a spouse or a loved one that has addiction, what does that look like? That means that we are separating the person from the addiction. We're not seeing them as the same person. There's this person that I love, that I want to help and I want to support.
Okay.
And then there's the disease that they're dealing with. There's the struggle that they're struggling with, right?
Right.
So how do we detach with love? We set boundaries.
Okay.
And boundaries are very, very important. Any healthy relationship is going to have healthy boundaries.
Right.
What do healthy boundaries look like? First of all, let's think of a boundary as a guideline to your life, right? A guideline to what you're willing to accept from others and what others are willing to accept from you, right?
Perfect.
So those are your guidelines. Maybe a boundary looks like, I will not accept drugs and alcohol in this house.
Got it.
Right? If you're using or you're drinking and that's a problem, you're going to have to do it outside this home.
Okay.
Okay. So maybe that's a boundary for you. If that happens, what's the consequence? Figure out what that looks like for you. Do they need to go elsewhere to sleep that night? What is it that works for your family dynamic, for the boundary that you're setting forth for you and your children and or whoever's in the household? Maybe another boundary is, I don't want friends here in the house that you use with or that you drink with. They're not allowed in my home.
Right.
They're not allowed here.
Or what about, I won't lie for you?
That's a huge boundary. I will not lie for you anymore. I will not cover up for you. I will not give you any more money. These are things that are really, really important. Even small things like they start not being home for dinner. Hey, dinner is going to be ready at 6 o'clock.
Right.
Me and the kids are going to sit down and have dinner at 6 o'clock. If they're not home, you eat without them.
Yeah. You're not
waiting
on
them. When they come home, you're not going to wait on them. You're not going to change. You want to keep as much normalcy in the household as possible.
Okay.
That is self-care. That is taking care of yourself. That is taking care of your children.
Right.
So if you guys have to eat without them and they come home and they're upset or sad or angry or whatever because you didn't wait for them, well, then that's a consequence for them.
Right. And that's their junk.
And that's
it's not yours to own. It's
exactly.
Not go make a plate for them now. I'm so sad for you. You missed it.
Right. It's not, I have everything set for you and we're just sitting here waiting for you.
Right.
Please come home quickly. And we're all putting our lives and ourselves aside for you because that is enabling.
Right.
That is affecting everyone else because of the dynamic and the reality that you're setting forth for us.
Absolutely.
So we're not going to accept that. I'm not going to accept your mood swings. Now, with that said, I do want to say that you have to look at your individual family dynamic, right?
Right.
If you are ever in a relationship where your safety is in question, where you don't feel safe or you don't feel that your children are safe, then this conversation looks very different. You need to seek help.
Yes.
Right?
Immediately.
But if you feel that these things is something that you have the flexibility to do, this is what's going to create change.
Right.
In your spouse. At the end of the day, your spouse does not want to lie to you. When they tell you, I want to change, I don't want to use anymore, I don't want to drink anymore, or I don't want to live this lifestyle anymore. Believe me when I tell you, they believe every word they're saying. They truly believe it. The problem is they can't stand behind it. Because they don't know who they are anymore, because they're attached to this substance that has taken over.
Right.
Because this substance makes them feel better than anything else in their life does right now. That is their priority. And even though they want something different, they can't detach from it.
What are options for getting help? I mean, you mentioned them for the spouse that's not the addict. What do options look like? And I know they're different for everybody, but briefly, what are options or steps people can take if they want to get out of the addiction, if they want to work on it?
Okay. So I really like this question because I like to think of this a little bit differently than maybe some of the things that you've heard out there.
Okay.
And the reason that I take this approach is because, again, I believe that every single person is so unique. We're all such individuals, and what works for one does not work for the other. But I like to take it in steps.
Okay.
So sometimes people aren't really aware of their full potential until they really start taking those baby steps, and then they realize, oh, I can actually do more than I think I can. And then that gives them little wins, and that starts creating successes and, motivation, and sometimes people take off running from there.
Right.
Sometimes people need a little bit more assistance. So, you know, a lot of times you will hear, oh, you have an addiction issue. Well, you need to get into an inpatient facility. Yes, correct. In some instances, absolutely.
Right.
Some people do need to go straight to they need to detox. They need to go to an inpatient. And then from there, they need to maybe go to a sober living environment. Or depending on their own home environment, they can go back to their home environment. Again, situations are different. But I also believe that for a lot of people, we have a lot of very functioning addicts in this world. I would say that the majority of our addicts are functioning.
And that's who we see here generally.
That is who we
see
here.
Not always, but.
Yeah. But we do have the majority being high functioning addicts. So for that person, what could treatment look like? Well, I would say if we're recommending, you know what? Let's start out with going to a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Mm-hmm. Let's start there. Let's go there three, four days a week. You know, try one out. See how, if you feel you fit, do you like it there? Did you feel accepted? Did you feel comfortable? If you didn't like it that one, maybe try a different one. There is community out there. There is support out there. So much of it. You can find it anywhere. So it's not try one and if you don't like it, stop. It's go to the next one. Try an Alcoholics Anonymous 3-4 days a week. Try, you know, Cocaine Anonymous 3-4 days a week. See if that is helping.
Okay.
If you find that I'm going, I'm getting the support, and I have been able to stop using, then continue. Continue going to that. Seek counseling. Get a counselor.
One-on-one.
Talk, yes, one-on-one individual counseling. You know, talk to someone about the purpose that it's been serving in your life. Maybe the reasons. Maybe where is this coming from? What's the drive? What is going on? What has gone on? What's happened? Why have I started these patterns? Why are these patterns so important for me? That is one option. Maybe that doesn't work. They continue to use.
Okay.
So I'm going to these support systems. Support groups, and this isn't working. I'm still using. Okay. Well, maybe the next thing is we try, you know, an outpatient facility. Let's try going 5-6 days in the evening, mm-hmm. every evening. Let's see if that kind of support system helps. You know, we're ramping it up a little bit. Then maybe from there, maybe you need to go to a partial hospitalization, do a PHP or do a, you can move up. You don't, again, depending on the individual, some right. individuals do need to go straight into an inpatient, into treatment
right
away. But for some people, you really can try to see, let's start here, let's start there, let's ramp it up here because you're still using, or let's, you can individualize the treatment to the person. That's why it's so important to seek help, to get with someone that you can talk to, that knows about addiction, and they can help you figure out what works for you. What right. works for you is not going to what is not going to be what works for the next person. It's going right. to look different.
And to me, I think that people need to understand the person that they seek the help from is not somebody that maybe has used before and overcome. Sometimes maybe that can help.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or do they need to seek like a licensed chemical dependency counselor like you are? Because that person knows the addiction, knows the different types, knows the different levels, and can help put you into a situation mm-hmm. of getting the help based on where you need. Mm-hmm. What would you say? Where would be their first step to look?
I would say that if you are looking to get treatment for addiction, uh-huh. that you seek the environment in which they are most specialized in. So I would look for someone who is a licensed chemical dependency counselor,
right.
or an intern, or a counseling center that has specializations in addiction.
Yes.
It does look different than normal counseling.
Absolutely.
And don't get me wrong, we love our patients mm-hmm. and our clients deeply. We truly care about each and every one of them.
Right.
You know, for me personally, I suffer with them sometimes, what they're going through. When
I see
them struggling, I struggle
right.
for them. I understand because I have been in those shoes and I know how hard it is to come out of that.
Right.
I know how it decimates mm-hmm. the trust in your family, the way they look at you, the beliefs that you believe about yourself.
Right.
What, you know, it really is starting brand new. It is like walking around, being in recovery and trying to come out of that lifestyle is like walking around with an open wound.
Mm-hmm.
You are having to be vulnerable in ways you never thought you'd have to be vulnerable. You're having to learn to communicate, to put yourself out there in ways that are not always comfortable. In fact,
right.
they're rarely comfortable.
And would you say that's usually why people start using, is to cope and avoid those feelings that now we're asking them to feel on a different level?
Why they start using? I would say that people start using for all different reasons.
Okay, so I'm trying to put it in a box and it can't
yes,
be put in a box.
You really cannot put it in a box because there's a lot of active users that really just started socially. They have
yeah.
very good families.
Yeah.
You know, there's no major trauma. There's no major drama. There's no family dynamics that are harmful that mm-hmm. have caused them to have feelings of, you know, worthlessness or things like this that they would be seeking an outlet for,
right?
For some people, they started using a little bit in high school. I started mm-hmm. with some marijuana, and then, you know, then I was introduced years later to ecstasy. And then from there, you know, it's a natural progression.
Right.
You know, I started drinking along with it. And then, you know, now with painkillers, you can get pills anywhere.
Right.
You can get pills. People are getting pills from their parents' bathrooms,
medicine
cabinets, you know, and they're selling them to friends. And people are accepting drugs that they don't even know what's in them.
Right.
They have no idea what it is.
Absolutely.
So it's not hard to get addicted these days.
Yeah.
On top of the fact that the drugs that we're seeing today are not the drugs of the 1980s. They're not the drugs of the 1990s.
Yeah.
These drugs are laced. These
yeah.
drugs are laced with fentanyl. These drugs, they're not as pure as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really walking into a very dangerous, dangerous situation. That's why we're seeing so many more people die from overdoses and things like that.
Absolutely.
Sometimes off of the very first time they've used.
First
many
time.
Times. It is very important to seek help from, back to your question, someone who really understands addiction. And if there's also mental health issues that go along with it,
absolutely.
You know, you're really kind of exacerbating an already very difficult
mm-hmm.
situation, right? It's like no other. It really
yeah.
is a beast of its own that needs to be tackled very, very individualized.
Okay. And I love that because you've made that point throughout here. It's very individualized. So while
very
we can sit here and talk about
mm-hmm.
it, I think the people that are listening need to know it's not all going to be looking like this for you. I think you've been very, very clear on that. And one of the reasons that I was so passionate about hiring somebody that had the specialty in chemical dependency is I know a lot about marriage counseling. I know about addiction. I mean, I read the 600-page book that you go take the test for, but it wasn't something that I was personally attached or passionate to, because when you spoke about how much you care, you got tears in your eyes and they can't see that. And I see that in you on a day-to-day basis. And I really feel like even when I was interviewing counselors for this licensed chemical dependency counselor position, I would say 99.9% had a personal attachment. They've walked in the shoes, or they've been a family member of somebody that's walked in the shoes. They knew that. And that's when I knew how important it was for me to separate the marriage counseling from the addiction. Sometimes I send the spouse over to you to have a conversation on the side. It's like, okay, help them understand it. Mm-hmm. Because I don't specialize in that. It's so individualized. Mm-hmm. That I think it would be unethical for me to do that, to try to help that as well. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying, yeah. Because you really, you have to see them. You have to understand that these are just people struggling with a struggle just like anybody else. It's
absolutely.
Just like someone that is struggling with, you know, an eating disorder or, you know, gambling or, you know, sex addiction. You know, it is just another struggle. It is just, and it's fierce and it's painful and it's something that is so hard to get away from.
So one of the other things I want to ask is this. When you're married, I am a big believer in marriages can survive anything. I'm a big believer in we can overcome anything. If both parties are willing to put their whole body in, not a foot out the door or a foot here, but they're willing to put their whole body in. So where do we draw the line of when is it time to move on to an actual divorce and that being healthier than staying in this relationship? Can you speak to that a little bit? Again, I know everybody's individual, but I do have people ask me, when is it time for me to say enough is enough?
That's a really good question. It's a hard question.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's a really hard question because, you know, there's no preset checklist that you can go, okay, I've tried this, I've tried this, I've tried this, I've tried this, and now, okay, I guess I'm done. You know, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't want to try anymore.
Okay.
Because it is very exhausting. And let me say that for the spouse who is supporting someone who has an addiction, everything that you're going through, all your feelings, all your emotions, all your sadness, your feelings of betrayal, your mistrust, it is completely valid.
Yeah.
It is so valid. You have every reason to feel the way that you're feeling and to be angry about it, right?
Right.
It gets exhausting to support someone with addiction.
I can imagine.
But with that said, if it's someone that you really love, that you really you can separate, like I said, when I talked about detached love.
Right.
When you can separate the addiction from the person and you see the person and that's the person that you love, that's the person you want a life with, right? If you get support for yourself and you're working your own recovery, right? You're getting stronger. You're doing the things that you need to do. You're taking care of yourself, taking care of your children. You know, you're setting your boundaries and you're communicating. One of the things that we haven't talked about much up until this point, but that is so important, is that we communicate. We keep the lines of communication open.
Okay.
And I'm going to get back to this question that you just asked.
That's fine.
Me, but I want to touch on that for a second, because when someone is trying to recover or they're gotten in treatment or they're just trying to do better,
right?
Because we have a lot of failed attempts for a long time sometimes before we actually find something that works for us. It is so important to allow ourselves to communicate within the relationship.
Okay.
What happens is that the addicted spouse knows the damage they've done. They start, not at first, but they start realizing, this damage, this chaos that they've created. And so then they want to isolate and they want to hide and they try to do it all themselves, because if I tell my spouse that I'm having a bad day, that I'm having cravings today, that I'm having urges today, that whatever it is, that I had a lapse today and I used, they're going to leave me, or they're going to trust me even less than they do now, or I'm going to blow things up. And so they hide, they isolate, right?
Right.
And this creates this place where we can't heal. We're not being honest. We're not being open.
Because there's distrust.
We're not reconnecting. Same with the spouse. Mm-hmm. The spouse that is supporting, they sometimes hold back. They don't want to tell that person how angry they are with them, how much they don't trust them, how scared they are. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it all comes down to fear.
Absolutely.
It all comes down to fear of what will this do to our family? What will this say about us, about me, about you? Mm-hmm. And so they hold back.
And then
they
don't
communicate. What if I communicate these feelings that I don't like him today,
mm-hmm.
that he has really hurt me deeply, or she has really betrayed my trust? Is that going to make them go use?
Right.
Because they're not strong enough right now for that, right? So then we don't communicate. And so, as you can see from what I'm saying, how can you ever connect?
Oh, wow.
When you can't open up and be honest.
Absolutely.
When the reality is, when you're trying to heal, when you're trying to come back together, what you need is to communicate. What you need is to have those hard conversations and be able to say, this has been a really tough day. For these reasons.
Right.
I'm feeling this way for these reasons. Hey, I just wanted to talk to you about that. I just wanted to put it out there because I know how important it is for us to talk about these things, to support each other. Look, when someone is trying, in a relationship is trying to survive and come out of this darkness,
mm-hmm.
you're basically reinventing yourselves again. You are basically starting anew. You're getting therapy, they're getting therapy, you're both in support groups, you're trying to work your recoveries, your treatments, because it's not just one person who's
Absolutely.
In this. The entire family dynamic is affected, is impacted. Mm-hmm. Your children are impacted. We have to allow ourselves to have these hard conversations, because we are never going to come back together. We are never going to figure out what our now our value system is, what our new family mottos are, what our mission statements are for our family moving forward. What are these things? What does our family look like now, right? So communication is so, so, so important. Communication doesn't mean that you're accepting everything the other person is saying.
Right.
It just means that you're
hearing them. Hearing and agreeing are two different things.
Very different things. That's why we separate the addict from, we separate the person from the addict.
Right.
Right.
This is so powerful.
So it's so important to keep the lines of communication open in a healthy way.
Right.
In a healthy way.
Yeah, you've got to
learn.
That could
be a whole other podcast, but in a healthy way.
Yeah, and it would be a whole other podcast because I think with it, you spoke to all the fears involved,
right,
which create the withdrawal from each person, which create a Grand Canyon of divide.
Yes.
And that is the biggest hurdle couples have without addiction is communication. But you add this in, oh my gosh, that's why what I feel like you just said is so powerful for people to hear.
Now, if you're in a situation where, you know, I mean, we've been years coming. I don't want to put a time frame on it. I'm just giving you an example.
Yeah.
You know, we've been dealing with this now for years.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get clean. They're hurting our family. I'm seeing significant negative changes in my children and myself. I can no longer function. Mm-hmm. My whole world revolves around them. And their reactions and their moods and how their presence is affecting. I'm beginning to get ill. I'm losing weight or I'm gaining weight. I can't function at work. Mm-hmm. My relationships are suffering because I can't focus on anything else.
It consumes you.
It consumes you. And you don't see that there's any movement towards
recovery
on the other end. And you've tried. You've been in support groups, you've tried couples counseling, you've tried, you know, maybe this isn't going to work out the way that I was hoping. But there's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah.
It's
not a black and white whatsoever.
And I don't want people to think that. I don't want people to think that because, again, if I can emphasize anything multiple times, it's the fact that the person that you're living with right now in active addiction, that person does not see themselves clearly. They're impaired. They're not realizing what they're doing.
Absolutely.
They do believe that they want to change for the most part, right? I'm not going to say that as a blanket statement, but I do believe that they want to change. I just believe that they need to be ready. They're not going to do it without motivation to change, which again,
goes into the boundaries,
goes into the, you know, got to stop enabling, got to start taking care of ourselves, right? To be able to do those things. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, but this is not a marriage killer. It can be. It absolutely can be.
But it doesn't have to be. It
doesn't have to be. Absolutely not. There are so, so many marriages that have gone through this, and they are in a beautiful and healthy place now.
Absolutely.
You know, there is so much growth that comes individually for each person when you come out of this, as well as your marriage. So. Yeah.
And I say that too, like even in all my marriage stuff, I try to focus on the individual as well, because it doesn't matter the circumstance of the marriage. They cannot do the individual work. We can't ever come together.
Right.
But I think everything you've said today is so powerful and is going to help so many outside of the walls of this counseling center across the world. Like, you just put it in a down-to-earth, simple way of understanding. Like, I understand more just sitting here with you today than I did before I walked in this door.
Thank you.
So I think it's going to be so helpful for people to hear it. Before we end, is there anything else that you haven't said that you hoped that you would get to say, or you thought, oh, I need to say this to people?
Gosh, just, man, Amy, put me on the spot.
And you can say no, and we can.
No, I'm thinking, I mean, there's so much that I would like to say.
And we probably need a whole series of podcasts.
Right? I guess one thing that I want to say is, and geez, I'm going to try not to get teary-eyed talking about this.
Good luck.
But I know, right? But is try to remember the reasons that you fell in love with each other.
Right.
Try to remember that the person that you may be seeing today, that person is still there.
Okay.
That person is not lost. That person, he's just, or she's just, they're confused. They're hurting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're struggling, or they just need to find a way out.
Right.
And it seems so easy to say, just stop, but it's not easy to do.
Absolutely.
It's not easy to do. So the other thing is, really pay attention to how you are supporting that person.
Mm-hmm.
If you truly want to support someone who is in, that has an issue with addiction, make sure that you're not adding to those addictions.
I want to once again thank you. This is so powerful. I cannot wait to hear the reactions from our listeners. And if you are listening, you can give feedback at hello@amywine.com. If you live in the Houston area, you can meet and talk to Adriana here in the office. And you can get that information at amywinecounseling.com and look up her bio. All right, so I want to thank Adriana for being here today. And I want to thank you for listening. And I hope that you have a great day and that your marriage is on fire.
Thank you.
Up our episode for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the show just so you don't miss any future episodes. While you're there, it would mean the world to me if you would take a few seconds and leave me an honest review. I read each and every one of them. You can find all the links and information mentioned in this podcast episode at www.amywine.com/podcast. Don't forget to tag me on Instagram at @TheAmyWine and let me know what you took away from this episode or what you would love for me to talk about in future episodes. Thanks for listening, and I will see you here again next week on Marriage on Fire.
Are you feeling like your marriage is more about going through the routine than the romance? Just the day-to-day drudgery of all the things and the chaos that surround you that you have to do. You're not alone. Hi, I'm Amy Wine, your marriage and family therapist and founder of Thrive Life TV, and we get it. Impact-driven achievers like you deserve a marriage that is just as successful as your business and your career. Your marriage is about more than just staying together. It's about growing together, laughing together, and reigniting the spark that makes you partners in every sense of the word. That is where Thrive Life TV steps in. Join me for exclusive sessions. We're going to tackle real life marriage challenges, from reigniting passion to deepening your emotional connection. We're talking real change, real results. It is time to transform your marriage into a thriving partnership that you both deserve. On Thrive Life TV, you're going to find practical strategies, shared experiences, and that extra push you need. Are you ready to uplevel your marriage? Visit thrivelifetv.com and let's bring the joy and love and yes, the fun back in your marriage. I'll see you inside.